Shalom Aleichem, Chaver, it's Binyamin Hammer at National Council, Young Israel. We are now beginning Shilas number 37th set of Shilas. Thank you, Rebbe.
Welcome. Question one is a familiar question. Discussed it at least twice before, but apparently it's coming up again. It's divided into six parts. A, what should our policy be when transgender people come to shul? B, when a man dresses like a woman, is it a michshel for him to allow him to sit with women? Is it a michshel for the men to allow him to sit with the men? C, when a woman dresses like a man, is it a michshel for the men to allow her to sit with the men? Is it maris ayin to allow her to sit with the women? D, would it be best lechatchila to encourage them to daven at home? E, what about shaking hands with or other physical contact with someone of the opposite sex who presents themselves as being of the same sex? F, does any of this change if the person has been altered surgically? Okay. It's impossible, according to halacha, for one to change his or her gender. Impossible. Cannot be done. So, if you're born a boy, you're a boy. If you're born a girl, you're a girl. And that's the way it is for the entirety of your life. In some shuls, they would opt for option D. Best lechatchila to encourage them to daven at home for two reasons. One, in some shuls, they're uncomfortable having individuals who are doing this kind of thing, which is considered to be against halacha, in a public fashion. Obviously, if we don't know about it, we don't know about it. But if someone's been a boy, suddenly appears as a girl, or vice versa, you do know about it. You'd really very much want this individual not to come to shul at all, because people in shul are often distracted by individuals who are in an outward way not comporting themselves in accordance with halacha, in particular in matters of this type. It's worse than someone who's mechalel Shabbos and comes into shul and you can somehow tell he's mechalel Shabbos. This is a much more sensitive area of halacha. It impinges upon the idea of a family. Shuls are based upon families and other reasons. So some shuls would opt for option D when possible. In addition, it's hard to know where to seat these people, as was mentioned in these various questions. So getting down to nitty-gritty, come to shul. So the word michshol is not the exactly right word that I would use. The question is it go against the law of separation of the genders in a shul? Everyone knows this was the battle between Orthodox and conservative in the 50s. Do you need a mechitza or not? We paskin, of course, that you do need a mechitza. The men on one side, women on the other side. So therefore, strictly speaking, a man who's born a man should sit in the men's section. Of course, the problem is, if he's now dressed like a woman, it's going to disturb the men in the men's section. So then they can't sit that person there if it's going to be distracting to the people who came to daven. On the other hand, to sit with women, because he's dressed like them, is keneged hadin, because he's really a man. So in the past, we've made a suggestion that in some shuls where it's not full to capacity, and there's a lot of room empty in the back, you ask the people who straggle and sit in the back for other reasons to come to the front, leave a number of rows empty towards the back, and have this individual sit in the very back, even though he's on the wrong side of the mechitza, because he's a man in the women's section. But if it's far away from the other women, in a shatat chagodol, I believe it can be mekel, as other rabbanim have written, about the ish bodeid be'ezras noshim, but the reverse, it would not be in violation of laws and mechitzas, again, in a shas hatzchak. So too with respect to C, one more time, she's a woman dressing like a man. She should not be sitting in the men's section because she's a woman. And she will, dressing in the women's section, sitting in women's section, since she now dressed like a man, she'll disturb the women. Once again, if it's possible, let her sit in the back of the men's section, far from the men, in a shas hatzchak. E, shaking hands. We've spoken in the past about shaking hands with a real woman, a man with a real woman, or vice versa. There are machmirim. Rav Moshe says it's also because it may turn out to be shalchiba, even though usually it's not. We mentioned that Rav Moshe himself, based on eyewitnesses, did in fact extend his hand when a woman extended hers first, even though he says he shouldn't rely upon it. It means for the amcha, you shouldn't rely upon it, because even though it's technically speaking not chiba, it could become chiba. But if he knew that it wasn't going to be chiba, kovod abrius, he returned the handshake, as my Rebbe of Salvation is exactly the same thing. They showed me a tshuva of Chaim Berlin, who seems to be Mekel as well, Mishum Derech Eretz. So therefore, Kal v'chomer, it should be mutter in this kind of a case. Surgically, makes no difference whatsoever. A man remains a man, a woman remains a woman. Question two. There are certain individuals who are born, quote, intersex, meaning they have physical manifestations of both genders. In the vast majority of such cases, the doctors render such a baby either male or female, often with a surgical procedure. Is such a procedure halakhically effective to remove the baby from the category of androgynous into the gender chosen by the doctors? If such a person were to undergo a surgical sex change later in life, to change to their gender to the one of the doctors did not choose, would that be halakhically effective? These are very good questions, and it's impossible to answer them in one fell swoop. But there are many, many, many different kinds of abnormalities. We should all thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu when we're born normal, because once it's not normal and not part of the body, there can be many different ways of being not normal. Very complicated. And the decisions as to how to determine what this child is also very complicated. Most poskim assume that we make the decision based upon the physical manifestations, not based upon the chromosomes, X, X, XY. These are things which they didn't have in the olden days. And therefore, if the person looks more like a girl, even though it's XY or vice versa, then most poskim assume that the halachic category is determined by the looks of that part of the body. And if, obviously, there can be many different kinds of abnormal presentations. So I can't answer the question. It's too many variables. One thing I can answer is such a shayla must be asked very carefully upon birth. And if the shayla was answered in a definitive fashion by poskim mumchim, it's difficult to say that the individual can then change back later on. If it was a shayla at the beginning, we weren't exactly sure what to do, then there's maybe some room to it. But it's very complicated. We're dealing with Gili Arayas Mamish. In other words, if the person is made into a woman, as usually happens in these cases, and halakhically the person is a man, so you're really, as you can understand very well, into a serious problem if she, who's really he, marries a man. So we have to be pretty clear on how to paskin in these shaylas, and that's why it's hard to imagine a case where there could be an additional change by surgery. But again, every case should be asked separately. Question three. I've recently attended shiva homes for several non-from people who are only minimally knowledgeable of Jewish customs. As a dalach, I sat and waited to be spoken to before speaking. The man sitting shiva, while entertaining his other non-from guests, who glanced my way at least once or twice, seemed to wonder, why isn't this guy talking? He apparently assumed that I was shy or something and proceeded to continue with his other guests, basically ignoring me. After 20 minutes, sitting uncomfortably quietly, his wife came and sat down and struck up a conversation with me, to which I responded, and then the evil joined in. Question. In a situation like this, where the Oval does not know the protocol about speaking first to Avelim, is it still necessary to sit quietly and be ignored because I'm not joining into the conversation? In most cases, my visiting the Oval is because I had a real connection to the deceased and wanted the Oval to know, to hear what I have to say, etc. Well, without him speaking to me first, I can't get through the door. In my opinion, if a conversation is going on between the Oval and the other Menachemim, a person who just walked in can certainly respond to one of the other Menachemim, thereby entering into the conversation. And as a result of that, the other will respond to the Menachem. Do not believe it's required that the other speak to the Menachem first before the Menachem speaks to other Menachemim. So this problem is not a problem if other people are around. If no one's around, you're the only one, then it's a much more complicated question. And in the case of Shas HaTzchak, it would be permissible for the Menachem to speak before the Avil greets him. Although in such cases, if no one else is around, it's more likely that the Avil, after a few minutes of discomfiture, will say something to the Menachem. Number four. What halacha should someone who is in the year for a parent be aware of for Purim, specifically giving or accepting Shalachmanas and the Purim Suda? Okay. Shalachmanas, an Avil, is chayav to send Shalachmanas. There is a restriction of, known as Shela Shalom, which exists, at least according to most, for someone who lost a parent for entirety of 12 months. And giving Shalachmanas is considered to be a kind of Shela Shalom. Therefore, one should not send Shalachmanas to an individual who is an Avelus of Yud Beis Chodesh. The way to get around it in most cases is to send to other members of the household, a spouse, a child, and get around it in that fashion. The Purim Suda. So, if the Avil and his family are accustomed to join a Purim Suda of family members, that's permissible during the year of Avelus. Of course, a person permitted to sit with the members of his family, no matter how extended the family is defined. That's no problem. In the absence of family, the Avil should have a more private Suda. If you want to invite one couple or be invited by one couple, that's fine. The Avil's not in Chayrim. Once you go past that, I believe it's proper to avoid other social friends. But it would be permissible to fulfill Haknasas Orchim, which means, as we spoke about, I believe, last time, inviting someone who has nowhere to go, someone who has a need for a place, as opposed to inviting someone who has many places to go. Question five. Some magazines come sealed in a plastic wrapping. Can this wrapping be opened on Shabbos? I believe the answer to the question is yes. Based upon a Tosefta, according to the Mishnah Berurah, you're permitted to rip the skin of an animal which serves as a cover to a barrel of wine. And this is similar, something which is simply covering the magazine. Most poskim assume it has nothing to do with a cooler of divrei machol. It would apply equally to magazines. Of course, it has to be a magazine which may be read on Shabbos. Question number six. Can an Avil in Shloshim or the year play a musical instrument? Is there a difference if it is a hobby or if it is her job? Again, we've addressed this before. I thought that music, technically speaking, should be permissible in the year of Avelus. For Parnasa, it should certainly be permissible. But even as a hobby, if you look in the early sources, you don't find a prohibition of playing or listening to music as such. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, he thinks that there is an early prohibition of dancing. He thinks that music is what he calls a kavachomer from dancing. If dancing is prohibited, certainly music. These days it seems that it's exactly the reverse, that dancing is still a big deal and music is nothing. It's not, doesn't have the same simcha, even live music, certainly not taped music. There is a Magen Avraham, end of Hilchos Tisha B'Av, that talks about a Suda, I think, on a Siri B'Av, where he says that there's a problem if during the Suda music is being played. That may be the case because it's in conjunction with a meal. Maybe it's referring to music which may lead to dancing and things of this nature. So there's better to be avoid that kind of music, especially during the context of a meal. But if one is playing slower music and there's no meal, maybe even faster music with no meal, I believe it's permissible, even though others say it is not. So this person in Avela should follow the psak that she feels is the most appropriate for her. Question number 7. Chosn and Kala getting married the Monday before Purim. A. Parsha Zachor is the Ofruf. Shul's minig is to give the aliyah to the Rav. Although I am not makbid, my shul is makbid on their minhagim. The chosn grew up in my shul and would like an aliyah, the aliyah, as would his parents. What should I do? Listen, every shul has its own minhagim. Shuls I've been in, the rabbi got 3 maftas a year. There were Shabbos Hagodol and Shabbos Chazon and Shabbos Shuvah. Didn't get the other haftoras, maftas. Even in the absence of a chosn, I think it's more proper that way. Rabbis shouldn't take too many maftas. However, if this minhag exists and the balabatim, generally speaking, want to give honor to the Rav, that's always a good thing. The Rav should try to be mochel on his cover, at least in this particular year, try to convince the balabatim to allow him to give the honor to this chosn. I can speak from personal experience. I have those 3 haftorahs as a rule in my shul. Hagodol, Shabbos Chazon, and Shabbos Shuvah. When it's a bar mitzvah, my shul, and Shabbos Hagodol, which has happened more than once, I'm very happy to give the haftorah over to the bar mitzvah bacha. I think that the rabbi here should be allowed to do the same. Fasting on Tanis Esther. Once again, I have personal experience. My daughter got married on the 9th day of Adar, and I pass that she should not fast on Tanis Esther. If you look at the source in Shara Tzion, Siman Tov Resh Pei Vav Sivkotin Tezayin, he says really a Baal Bris, and if you look in the Shari Tshuva, Sivkotin Aleph, a Chosn Shiva Tzmei Mishnah is even more lenient than a Baal Bris. Shara Tzion says that a Baal Bris, maybe he shouldn't fast on Tanis Esther. And after Mincha, is the following phrase, Bivadai lichora yesh lahakol. That's almost a contradiction. Bivadai lichora. What that means exactly, I can't tell you, but he says, bottom line, you should not fast after chatzos. So this chosn and kala should be told that they should not fast after chatzos. Now, I saw this quote from Rebbe Yashiv and Rebbe Vadya. Rebbe Vadya says, You must eat, because if you don't eat, it's an aver, yontav shalohu. You're not allowed to fast. I remember when I had a son that was born on Vav, Adar, the bris was Yud Gimel, Shtanis Esther, and I was left with this quandary. I said, I really can fast, I'm a good faster. But the Rabbi Vadya said, you're not allowed to fast. So we have to chatzos. The Sunday came to my house and we had a Suda. Later I find out the Rav Moshe disagrees and says that one should fast on Tainas Esther. It seems to me that you can't win. So I believe the proper psak is to eat, at least after Chatzos, which is the psak of the Shara Tzion and a Rav Yashiv. The lumdus is that the reason why we normally do not fast on a tainus which is not nidche, even for someone who was a Baal Bris or a Chosn, because of Emlo Alas Yerushalayim al Rosh Simchasi, as the Ritva explains in Masechta Tainus, quoted there by the Shara Tzion. But Tainus Esther, as opposed to the others, is not a tainus on Avelas Yerushalayim, and therefore the leniency applies. Question number 8. Someone in the community is making a simcha. He's concerned that if he doesn't ask his father to speak at the simcha, he may be insulted. However, the father is a bit socially awkward, and the son feels very embarrassed to have him speak. In addition, his wife feels very strongly that her father-in-law should not speak, as she finds her in-laws to be very embarrassing. Rabbi adds, I would say that their assessment is right. What should be done? In addition, this issue comes up year-round, as the parents would like to come for Shabbos and feel insulted that they haven't, but the children feel embarrassed to have them around, especially as they're in a public role and much attention is drawn to it, nor does it create a healthy chemistry in the home when they are together. How should this be handled? Wow. A very, very hard, the hardest question. As we know, Kibud Av Va'Em is a mitzvah in the Torah. It's a tremendous mitzvah. L'man yarichon yomecha. Chazanish writes that it's only true in a situation in which the request, either explicit or implicit, of the parent, it makes logical sense. If the parent's request does not make logical sense, then, as Chazanish puts it, the parent is required to be mevatel his ratzon and not ask for something to be done. And as a result, the child is not required to follow a request which should never have been made in the first place. Now, the fact that a father is socially awkward, so what? So what? A child, and even a child-in-law, should try not to be embarrassed by the social awkwardness of the parent or parent-in-law, given the hakaras hatov, the tremendous debt of gratitude that is owed. Just imagine that a person received a $1 million gift from somebody, and he wants to get up and speak about it, but he's socially awkward. He'll say, he gave me $1 million, so I'll sit through the socially awkward speech. Your parents gave you your whole life, more than $1 million. So if it's at all possible, if they feel they want to say something, we should accede to their wish, if it's at all possible. Now, of course, you should try to make it brief and try to find it a time of a program when perhaps it's less of an embarrassment. All that is okay. But if they want to speak and you say no, it's very difficult. Try to find a slot somewhere. Maybe if they speak at the family meal when the other people aren't there, find a place that the parents should not be insulted. If they absolutely do not want, they have to ask the rabbi. If the rabbi thinks that it's an unreasonable request given the circumstance, then they're not required to accede to the request. Inviting for Shabbos, as long as there's only a lack of social propriety, there's awkwardness and some measure of embarrassment to some extent, should still invite them. If there's not a healthy atmosphere, try to establish a healthy atmosphere. And if impossible, go back to the same Rav and ask him, given these circumstances, we tried our best to make it a pleasant atmosphere, and we were unable to do so, and it's very uncomfortable and embarrassing, causes family dynamic problems. If the Rav feels that, as a result, the parent's request is not reasonable, he'll tell you so. Otherwise, the default position is, we fulfill kibud av v'aim. 9. Where is the correct place for the omer for the chazan to daven from? Is it a problem to have the omer located directly in front of the oren, or must it be to the right or the left of the oren? If it isn't in the right place, is it necessary to move it? The omer should be in the front, not in the middle, the chatchila. Either directly in front or to the side, doesn't matter. And should you move it to the right place? Lachatchila, yes. We do whatever is possible. We've spoken in the past about some shuls where the omer is further back because they can't hear. If it's all the way in the front, the Rav Moshe is Meikel. So every case has to be judged on its own merits. Number 10. My synagogue has a rabbi's discretionary fund to give money to individuals in need. Two of the officers of the synagogue want me to divulge the names of the people to whom I give money. Is that appropriate? Absolutely not. Shouldn't that be strictly confidential? Absolutely yes. I don't understand how these officers want this divulged to them. Now, if there's any suspicion of wrongdoing, then there's no alternative. But I just want to know because they want to know. The whole idea of discretion means not just discretion to make a choice, but discretion from the word discreet, which means to be quiet. You don't give it out. It's, often people are doing acts of stucco to a rav on the understanding that no one will find out about it. And they would be very disappointed if the word got out. We can only just think about the whole fight now between FBI and Apple about these things. If something is given under an assumption of confidentiality, it should be kept to as much as possible. 11. An officer of the synagogue wants me to divulge to him the names of those congregants to whom I either speak or visit, but not the contents of the conversation. Is that appropriate? No. Should the identity of the people to whom I speak or visit be confidential? Yes. Again, once again, if the officer is afraid the rabbi's not doing a good job, then you may have to accede a little bit to tell him some things you're doing. But these are private sessions that could have to do with the most intimate details of a person's life. Could be secrets with respect to health, with respect to shalom bayis, with respect to finances, other kinds of sinful behavior, anything could happen. Why should the other person know about it if it may compromise the confidentiality of the Rav? 12. May we schedule mincha on a Shabbos or fast day for 10 minutes before mincha gedolah, as it will take that long to finish laning, or does ashrei and laning have to be after mincha gedolah? We saw about this before in the past. Turns out that it's a machloikas. In my view, it's shatat chak. You have to get people out earlier. It's permissible as long as you get the Shemon Esrei after mincha gedolah. It's also a dispute. What is mincha gedolah? The dispute do you follow shows manios or shows shavos? Many people are machmer both ways. In my view, it can be makel based on the shows manios in the wintertime. You have to be machmer based on the shows manios in the summertime. Finally, question number 13. Bala Batna have asked me to speak publicly about the upcoming presidential election and for guidance of whom to vote for. Is this a subject for a Rav to speak publicly about? Absolutely not. What would be the appropriate to share on the subject and what venue? Zero. A Shabbos drasha during the week or in the library? No. I have to tell you, to share on the subject can be done, of course, either in a private conversation, or if it's one speaking a bit more publicly, one should speak about the general rules, what kind of candidate a person should be voting for, what issues should you be looking out for. For example, the issue of Eretz Yisrael, which in my mind is the most important issue of all, comes to the president. And then, if that's what you say, and then the Balabas will figure out, if that's the case, I should be voting for candidate A or B, that's his or her decision. I'm told if a rabbi officially endorses a candidate, the shul might even lose its tax-exempt status for charitable donations. You're not supposed to be involved in these kind of political matters. I have to say, again, speaking of generalities, that I believe that I have voted in every presidential election since I was able to do so. But as things stand today, Motsoi, Super Tuesday, I don't know. Sometimes you have to stay home. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rebbe. I hope we can call upon you again in a few weeks.
Call tov.
Zeig, bye-bye. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.